Hello and welcome to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean, and I'll be your host. In today's episode, I speak with Canadian Baseball Network contributor and accomplished author, Danny Gallagher. Danny co-authored the recently released book, Ecstasy to Agony, the 1994 Montreal Expos, How the Best Team in Baseball Ended Up in Washington 10 Years Later. Danny co-authored the book with Bill Young. It's their second collaboration, the first being 2005's Remembering the Montreal Expos. The book is an incredibly detailed account of the factors that led up to the 1994 season and the Expos being the best team in baseball at the time of the strike. They also go into depth covering the next 10 years and all the factors that contributed to the exodus of the Expos to Washington. They interviewed over 100 people and have truly left no stone unturned in covering this topic. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get into that interview right now.
All right, thanks for being here, Danny. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Now, before we talk about the book and the Expos, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and your background with the team?
Okay, I was born in Renfrew, Ontario, near Ottawa, but I grew up in nearby Douglas only because the only hospital nearby was in Renfrew. I would have preferred to have been born in Douglas because that's my hometown, but that's how it happened. And, you know, I grew up playing baseball, some serious sandlot baseball in Douglas and Renfrew and then Ottawa, Regina, Sudbury, Montreal, wherever I worked as a newspaper reporter, I played. I got playing for one of the local senior sandlot baseball adult baseball, and that's how I kind of had a great love of baseball growing up. And then listening to Bob Prince, the Pittsburgh Pirates announcer on KDKA in the 60s and 50s, we could get the KDKA broadcast late at night when the Canadian signals went down. The American signals would come up on pretty good, really solid. You could really listen top volume in the States. So late at night, I'd be listening to Bob Prince and the Pirates and Bobby Clemente and so on and so on. And then as I grew into the love of newspaper writing as well, eventually, I got to Montreal and became a beat writer in 1988, and since then, I've been kind of doing stuff on the Expos. So that's how I've had a great love for baseball for a long time.
Now, your co-author, Bill Young, who couldn't be here to join us today, can you tell our listeners a little bit about Bill and also how the two of you met?
Sure. Yeah, Bill is a retired college administrator in the CGEP system in Quebec, which is the equivalent of the community college system in Ontario. Like George Brown there, they call it CGEP. But anyway, he has had a lifelong love of baseball, and he kind of admired a lot of the writing I had done in earlier books, including the first Expos book in 1997, but we never really communicated until maybe 2003, 2004, after the Expos left for Washington. He had somehow sent me an email, and I got a hold of the email, and he said, why don't you write another book on the Expos about, you know, them, the history of the team, and so on and so on. I said, well, I made a suggestion, why don't you help me write the book? So that's how it got started, and to tackle a book by yourself is kind of takes a time-consuming. So the two of us, we kind of got together and we wrote that book and got it out within about 15 months of the team leaving for Washington. And it sold about 2,300 copies, and it was kind of a bestseller on the Montreal Gazette bestseller list for about 7 weeks. And then a couple of years ago, in the fall of 2010, I made the suggestion to Bill, what do you think about doing a book on the 94 Expos? Because they were maybe one of the greatest teams in Expos history. So that's, for about 3 years, we worked on that, and it was quite a wonderful project. And we finally came out with it December the 19th or so.
Now, you interviewed over 100 people for this book. What were some of your favorite interviews and why?
I think to get a hold of Bud Selig, for example, and Don Fear, the former executive director of the Players Union, to get them talking about the 94 Expos and talking to Tony Gwynn. I thought it was important that we try to get a hold of people from other teams as well to talk about the Expos. And Tony Gwynn was really high on the caliber of the 94 Expos. He said they're definitely going to the postseason and would have done some major damage. And he felt bad that the Expos weren't able to accomplish what they had set out to do. And talked to John Schuerholz of the Braves and David Montgomery of the Phillies. And I talked to Derek Jeter about, you know, he got bypassed by the Expos in the 92 draft. And talking to a lot of the scouts that used to be scouts for the Expos, and Dan Duquette, the former GM, who actually put together that 94 team, even though he was the general manager of the Red Sox in 94, he was the major architect of that 94 team and putting together trades, especially the one for Pedro Martinez. So, and of course, a lot of the Expos players, including Marquis Grissom and Darren Fletcher and Cliff Floyd and Larry Walker, that we all interviewed, they're very, very eloquent and had great tidbits to help us out.
You mentioned Derek Jeter. It was actually a question I was going to ask you a little later on. I'm slightly embarrassed to say I actually didn't know that until I read your book. There's a lot of things I learned reading the book, but that was one that definitely surprised me. Do you think that that would have had a major impact on the Expos had they drafted a player of Jeter's caliber and he had spent the years that he spent in New York with Montreal?
I think that it would have really helped him for a certain period of time, bearing in mind that the Expos never really kept many players for very long because of their salary restraints. And but he probably would have been there for maybe 5 or 6 years if they drafted him. He may not have been ready for the 94 season, but he did start with the Yankees pretty much full-time in 96, so he probably may have stayed there a good part of the into 2002 or something, you know, depending on how much money he was going to be commanding for a salary. But he would have made some difference, I think, that in terms of the quality of the team after 96 and so on, yeah. But as Kevin Malone was saying at the time, he was looking at him, Derek Jeter, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, that it's hard to figure out how good a player is going to be. Excuse me. How good a player is when he's just a teenager, like 17 or 18. Can't foresee how good a player is going to be. So
plus, he was injured, right?
That's right, yeah. So they decided at that time, because they had Cordero as a shortstop, that maybe go for left-handed pitcher B.J. Wallace, who never did get to the majors. But at that time, they figured they need some pitching.
Now, in your research, I imagine there were some surprises. Were there any that real standout surprises, things that you learned in doing your interviews that you actually had never heard before or didn't know?
I think what was really forthcoming from a lot of players was that every time they would come to the park, they knew they had the caliber of team that they could win every game they played. And even if they're down 4 or 5-0, they knew they had the horses and the offense and the pitching and the defense to win a game. So that was kind of interesting coming from a lot of the players, that they really enjoyed going to the park. They were waiting to get their uniforms on, and because they knew they had the horses to win every game. That was kind of one little tidbit that kind of stood out.
Any more?
The Tim Spear gave me the quote one time, the third string catcher. And I liked it to have been able to talk to a lot of the, what we call the lesser lights, Peter, who didn't get much recognition. So I was happy to be able to get a hold of some of these guys to give them credit in the book, like Juan Bell, who maybe didn't play too much that year in the infield, or Tim Spear. Tim Spear told me that you know, the Expo, 94 Expo, weren't all Boy Scouts, but they would go out and hit it up in the town after a game. He never gave me any details, but, you know, just funny little stuff like that. And sometimes Larry Walker would play bubblegum tricks on top of players' hats, and one time Juan Bell did it to Larry Walker, and Larry Walker wasn't happy about it. I said, well, what are you doing that to me for?
Who do you think was the best player on the 94 team? I know it's a tough question because there really were so many incredible players, but in your personal opinion, who was the best player on the 94 team?
I guess it would have to be Walker because he was the all-around player, great offense, great defense, just an all-around 5-tool player. And, you know, close behind would have to be Moises Alou and Marquise Grissom. And then, you know, pitching, Ken Hill had a tremendous year, and unfortunately, because of the strike and the cancellation of the season, he didn't get the opportunity to win 20 games. I think he would have won 20 games easily and maybe gotten the Expos record for most wins in the season, surpassing Ross Grimsley's 20-win season in 1978. So I think in that order, I guess that you'd have to say Walker was the best player. But it's funny, Peter, that he was not an All-Star that year at the All-Star game in Pittsburgh. But I remember Joe West telling me that he thought that, you know, Larry Walker was the most dangerous hitter in the National League in 1994. So I guess we'd have to say Walker.
Now, you mentioned the strike. I want to talk a little bit about the strike and the things that happened after and ask you, there's a lot of contributing factors to the Expos leaving Montreal, and you've covered most of them in the book. Rank them for me, if you can. Talk to me about the key stages from the strike and onward that led to the team ultimately leaving, the key mistakes and the things that should have been done differently.
Yeah. You know what, Peter, to put it all in perspective, after the 93 season, when the Expos came really close and got close to the Phillies in the National League East, didn't quite win it, but they won more than 90 games. Their season ticket sales, unfortunately, weren't very good at all. And going into the 94 season, you know, Claude Brochu, the managing general partner, expressed concerns to me, and I guess other reporters in April of 94, I wrote a story for the Globe and Mail that this is a pretty tough year for us because we have very little money. We had very few season ticket sales. So there was almost like, he didn't say we're on death row, but I mean, that was their year to do something in terms of having a great team and going to the postseason and building up revenue for the 95 and beyond, build up a reputation to people who might be able to get a downtown ballpark together. But August the 12th was the first sign of disaster. And then September the 14th was the next point of agony it's part of the title of the book. That was agony on September the 14th when Bud Selig announced the cancellation of the season. And then, you know, you go the whole winter of 94-95, Peter, where the game is locked down. It's in a state of limbo. There's no ticket sales. The players are still on strike. So every team, including the Expos, they can't do anything. They can't sell any season tickets because the game is on strike. It's ridiculous, you know. So Expos revenue was zero, and I guess every other team was zero too, but April of 95, the judge, Sotomayor, declares that the game should continue, but at that point, the Expos have no money put away in the bank to pay these players, so they have to let go Grissom, Hill and Wetland, and then they don't offer a contract to Walker. So it would have been nice if they'd been able to keep two of those players. But, Peter, that's the kind of little framework of the things that kind of put the Expos 10 years later. That was the starting point, 94 strike and the cancellation of the season and no money in the offseason to sign players.
Is it a fair statement to say that had the strike not happened, the Expos would still be in Montreal? Or would the other contributing factors in the years following still have led the team to leave?
Oh, I think the team would still be there because they would have built up quite a revenue from the postseason sales and the rest of the regular season games in August and September at the Big O. They would have generated a lot of crowds of 40,000 plus, and then they would have had, you know, postseason playoffs and World Series if they make it to the World Series. That built up a jackpot of money for the following season, and then be able to sign guys like Grissom Hill and Wetland and to long-term contracts, which they frowned upon because they just didn't think they had enough money to pay these guys long-term. But if the season had continued, definitely they would have been able to sign some of these guys to long-term contracts and build up a bit of a dynasty, Peter, through the rest of the 90s.
Jeffrey Loria, his exit and deal with Major League Baseball, what happened with the Marlins, the sale of the team, the ownership by MLB. I just wanted to know, as a fan of the team, a lifelong fan and someone who is entrenched with the team, what was that like watching that unfold?
I guess it must be tough. Like, Loria, you know, sort of half promising they're going to get this ballpark downtown, and then he decides to, it's not going to work, and then he wants to get another team someplace else, and then he decides to work out a deal where the Expos' fantastic spring training facility in Jupiter with the Cardinals, he wants that part of any deal if he gets the Marlins. So he ends up taking a lot of Expos' front office people with him. He is not good news in the eyes of Expos fans. He is not a good person. No.
Now, so, Major League Baseball. A lot of people will say that Major League Baseball and the way that they handled the situation played a big part in the demise of the Expos. Do you think that Major League Baseball could have, should have handled that situation better? And if so, how?
I guess they looked at the season or the attendance at some of these games in 2001, 2003, and at that point they made this ridiculous decision to play a lot of games in Puerto Rico, and you know, it was just a farce.
Oh, that was so stupid.
The players had to travel and they would play their home game, Montreal home games in Puerto Rico. It was just a disaster and a farce. You know, Bud Selig maybe takes the blame for some of that, and I don't know how differently they would look at it. They're looking at attendance figures of 3,000, 4,000 at Expos games. They tried to shake it up and put games in Puerto Rico, but didn't make any sense.
Now, this brings up an interesting comparison. I was going to ask you this question a little later, but I'm going to bring it up now because it really... there are parallels here. In the book, you referenced Keith Olbermann talking about baseball in Florida and his comments in that there won't be a team in Florida in 2020. Also, the talk of potentially moving the Rays to Montreal. I look at the Rays in a very similar situation. Attendance is horrible, and I mean, they're a perennial winner. Their stadium is undesirable, needs to be replaced, and the city won't or will not get involved in replacing that stadium. Situation seems to be very similar, yet Major League Baseball continues to say, no, they're not moving. We're not moving anybody around. What do you think about that whole situation, and do you ever think that we could see a team like the Rays moved back to Montreal?
You know, it's the prototype. The Braves are the prototype Expos team because of their great organizational staff and their minor league system. Their scouting system is a prototype of all of those Expos teams from, you know, when Dombrowski came in as a sort of, I guess, the GM of sorts in 85 and helped really build that scouting system. And it always was, I guess, a fairly good scouting system beginning in 69. But from 85 until 2004, even when they left the team, the Expos always had a good scouting system and then a minor league system. So the Rays have a tremendous system in a similar fashion. And that would be the ideal franchise to be in Montreal.
What about the fact that it's an American League team? How do you think that would go in Montreal?
I don't think it would really matter. I think the fans would probably gravitate to a team as long as they would have a team. And, of course, you would have to have an owner with deep pockets, Warren Cromartie, looking for somebody with deep pockets, and you also have to have the eventual promise of a downtown ballpark in downtown Montreal, you know. So there's a lot of factors. The revenue sharing system, Peter, would be very, very helpful to a team returning to Montreal. The Canadian dollar is much better than it was 10 years ago, even though it's declined in the last few weeks. There's certainly factors there. The only thing is that the payrolls are not really going down. The expenses of operating a Major League Baseball team are still very, very high. Whether you could find an owner to sustain the payroll costs, I don't know. But I think the Expos, the fans, would support a team if they had a stadium downtown.
This study, the Montreal Baseball Project's feasibility study, I'm sure that you've read it and reviewed it. Mentioned in the book. Do you see any key problems with the study? Does it give you hope? I mean, when you read that document, how did you feel?
Yeah, it's quite encouraging. The Conference Board of Canada report and the Montreal Board of Trade report, they both give positive reports about the return of baseball to Montreal. The Conference Board, I think it was a couple of years ago, 18 months ago, and then Board of Trade is quite encouraging too. Yeah, it has to be a promising thing for return to baseball in Montreal. Just that hopefully there was somebody with deep pockets that would come along, and then of course you have to get approval from baseball to transfer a team, and that's the way Cromartie is looking at it, to get an existing team, because right now baseball has no plans to get involved in an expansion. You know, even the Miami Marlins, they're not doing that great. And heaven forbid, what if the Expos took back the Marlins from Loria?
I think we've all thought of that.
Yeah.
What about the Blue Jays? I mean, the Blue Jays have national coast-to-coast rights on baseball now. They've spent years building up their brand as Canada's team, and quite frankly, they've been quite successful at it. I think they've won over a lot of, you know, diehard baseball fans in Montreal and across the country. And it's evident when you go to see the Blue Jays game in Seattle and there's more Jays fans. You know, Beeston publicly said that he would support Montreal coming back to Major League Baseball. Do you really think the Blue Jays would be behind something like this, understanding that they'd be giving up likely half the country and territory?
Yeah, it would be interesting. They, at some point last summer, Paul Beeson, the Blue Jays president, came out in public with talking to a reporter. He said, yeah, we're looking at trying to get a couple of exhibition games in Montreal in the next year or two. I think I'm assuming he was supporting the idea, I guess, because of Cromartie. He knew that Cromartie had been doing some legwork, and I think he was encouraging Cromartie by eventually saying, okay, we're getting these two exhibition games. So I think they're probably behind any movement to get a team in Montreal. But I do agree with you that it would probably maybe take away some of the fans. I don't know how many fans, but I think that Blue Jays are fairly supportive of any return to Montreal.
What do you think about the spring training games? Do you like the idea?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's I guess they're going to have about 40 or 45,000 people at each game. And then when that happened, that's when Cromartie decided to have his Expo 94 Expos reunion on March the 29th. The exhibition games are on the Friday night, the 28th, and then in the afternoon of the 29th, and then the night of the 29th is the Expos 94 gala. So it's the gala itself is going to be, I guess it's going to be well attended, so it's going to be, should be quite a weekend for Montreal baseball. And I think Cromartie would be using the attendance at those two games. That's another little leverage for to show baseball that baseball could be supported again in Montreal with crowds in the 40s.
Another thing that I read in the book that was at the end of the book that I had no idea about this as well. You referenced an idea from Jack Todd to hold up the parade that never was for the 94 team when the Blue Jays come to Montreal this spring. Do you think that could happen? And would you do that, I mean, in your opinion?
I suppose it would be quite a tribute to the team, the best, I guess to say that's the best team in franchise history, even better than 79, 80, and 81. They had some great teams then. It would be it would be quite a gesture, yeah. It's not out of the realm, but I don't know if it's going to happen. But
I tend to think that as much as the games are going to get baseball noticed again in Montreal and get people looking at Montreal, something like a shot of you know, downtown street in Montreal with 50, 60,000 screaming fans on either side of the street and the 94 Expos parading down it. I don't know. Something about that image makes me think that that's really going to get people to take notice. So I hope they do it. I hope they do.
Yeah, Peter, it's a great idea. I'm just wondering if they keeping a secret for now. I don't know. But
never
it's
know.
A great idea.
Are you a Nationals fan? How do you?
I am not a Nationals fan. I do not follow the Washington Nationals. I do, I guess, in a way, I may take a look at the standings, but I don't really follow the team per se. No.
Now, who is your favorite Expo throughout all the years, your absolute favorite player?
Ooh, that is a good question. I think it would have to be Rusty Staub. One of the reasons, his first two names are the same as mine. My name is Daniel Joseph, and Rusty Staub's real full name is Daniel Joseph Rusty Staub. But also because he was a hero, early franchise hero, and then he came back in 1979, and he had that really special pinch-hit moment in July of 79 that stands out. That's my favorite Expos moment. He didn't really do anything at the plate, but when he came up to the plate, 60,000 people gave him a standing ovation, and he had to step out of the box and, you know, get himself together because he was just really so touched by this ovation. And just that moment really stood out. I think it's all part of me saying, you know, that Rusty is my favorite player.
I'm glad you chose Rusty because I wanted to ask you another question about Rusty Staub. At the end of the book, you have your 36 Expos memories. And yeah. Number two is not one that I am familiar with. And I purposely did not research it because I wanted to hear it from you in more detail. Tell me more about Rusty Staub running off the field to change his uniform because he soiled his pants. When and where did this happen?
It was in 69, 70, or 71. I never did find out what year it was, but Mother Nature came calling Peter, and he had to do it in his back of his pants. It was unfortunate, and he had to run off the field and change his pants. So I guess he had to tell reporters after the game why he had to leave the field.
I've been watching baseball my entire life, and I have never seen anything remotely as ridiculous as that. That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, Danny, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you taking the time. I really enjoyed the book myself. Can you tell people, in closing, how they can get a copy of the book?
That's right. All across Canada, they can get it. Most of the chapter stores in the various communities across Canada. Slowly, some stores may not have it, but it's slowly getting into a lot of the chapter stores. A lot of the chapter stores do have it. Some stores, they're waiting copies of the book. And then, Peter, a lot of coal stores in Ontario and Quebec have it. And then various independent bookstores like Ben McNally's on Bay Street in Toronto, south of Queen Street. And then the Cleo in Point on the West Island in Quebec, and various other stores. And also they can email expos94book@yahoo.ca. And they can also call this phone number, 289-200-8448, or they can call 416-535-7738. But chapters has been, and Indigo have been very supportive of taking the book. They've been wonderful.
How's the response been? The early returns.
We've been very, very good. They have some great sales. What we're doing, Peter, is putting in the groundwork, as my girlfriend Sherry Backus says, to lay the groundwork for media coverage. We're sending out the books. And now that the new year is upon us, we're getting media coverage, which will spur even more book sales. And the podcast that you are doing with me is another avenue, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today and talk about the book. It's been 3 years in the making. Just a wonderful project.
Well, I appreciate you coming on to talk about the book, Danny, and also everything that you do at the Canadian Baseball Network.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
And that's it for today's episode. I'd like to thank Danny Gallagher for coming on the show to talk about his book. I hope you all pick up a copy to relive the best and worst moments of the Montreal Expos through Danny and Bill's fine account. I'd also like to thank the Isotopes for the music for our show. Make sure you check them out on iTunes. They have a new album out now. Also, a huge thanks goes to Effective Business Video for our show's production. As we start the second year of our show, it's important to recognize Dan at EBV and his tireless efforts to make us all sound good. We wouldn't have a show without you, Dan, so thank you very much. If you have any suggestions for the show, please email us at podcast@canadianbaseballnetwork.com. We'd love to hear them. Thanks for listening to the Canadian Baseball Network podcast. I'm Peter Bean, signing off.